Hello, I'm Adrian Finnegan. Welcome to the Inside Story podcast, where we dissect, analyze, and help to define major global stories. A dispute is growing between Mali and France. Bamako has accused Paris of abandonment as it reduces its military involvement in the fight against armed groups in the Sahel region. Now, mercenaries from the Russian security firm Wagner are expected to replace French soldiers. That's a move that's made many nervous. So, what are the risks? So let's bring in our guests for today's discussion. Fabrice Poitier is Chief Strategy Officer at Rasmussen Global. He joins us via Skype from Santander. Vigwe Agwegu is a security analyst at Afropolitica, and he joins us via Skype from Abuja. And from Washington, D.C., we're joined by Andrew Leibovich, Policy Fellow at the European Council on Foreign Relations. Good to have all of you with us, gentlemen. Let's start with you, Andrew. So, as we heard, President Macron says that Mali's government has zero credibility. Is he right? And what's his reasoning for saying something so controversial so publicly?
Well, what this really comes from is a lot of frustration, I think, that's not just in France, about the behavior of Mali's transitional government and the fact that they've signaled multiple times, but especially recently, that they are planning or likely planning to extend the transitional period past what the international community agreed to. I don't think it's necessarily fair to say that they have no credibility, but certainly there's a lot of frustration in the region and in the international community about the transitional government and about trying to figure out what they're actually doing, particularly amid these reports of negotiations for the arrival of Russian mercenaries in the country.
Okay, Fabrice, just remind us, why is France reducing its military presence in the region?
Simply because it's not sustainable. We have more or less 5,000 French forces deployed in the region, and both the death toll, but also financially, it's not sustainable. And at the same time, you see, I think, pretty mediocre results in terms of containing the jihadist threat. So I think there has to be a moment, a kind of decision point, and clearly President Macron has made some decision towards a progressive withdrawal. However, to come back to your previous question, he's also in a difficult position, and I think that's why he's increasing the pressure on the regional governments, because he needs those governments to be more solid and more reliable in order to take over what the French forces are doing. And that's his predicament right now.
Is he doing that, though, by accusing Mali's government of having zero credibility?
Well, I think he's also, reminding that basically their security is, to a large extent, depending on the French presence. So they have to think twice before basically not willing to be able to play their role. And I think Afghanistan and the withdrawal from Afghanistan was a pretty shocking case for everybody, both the French, because if you withdraw too fast, you will have a complete collapse, but also for regional governments that they depend to a large extent on foreign forces like the French. So it's a complicated, embrace of both the regional and the French leaders who are depending on each other. And I think Macron is trying to play a bit hardball here.
Vigwe, French troops were warmly welcomed into Mali back in, 2013, when militants were threatening to seize control of the whole country. Mali's government is unhappy right now with the drawdown, or at least in which the way in which the drawdown has been announced. How do people, though, in Mali feel about French troops? They've not brought peace and stability to the region at all, have they?
No, they haven't. The context has changed. When we talk about French intervention or French counterterrorism intervention in West Africa, or particularly in Mali, it has to be, the next question is, under what context? The context of from 2013, when there was a real direct threat to the state, or the fear of state fracture, early of today, is a little bit different, or at least significantly different enough to see that the response then was, of course, the people wanted the state to still be, to be together and functioning because of the situation then. But now, what you have is from 2013 to 2021. A very lackluster result on the ground. Jihadism is growing across the Sahel, not just in Mali. And then with recent protests, you would see on the streets you know, many Malians waving the Russian flag just to show the discontent, you know, with regards to French presence. Also, even before the coup, there was major protests against Boubacar Keïta, the former president, who was deposed, you know, via coup. And in those protests, of course, you could taste the discontent on the streets, you know, of Mali. So it all comes down to the lackluster results on the ground from the French intervention that has it's no longer on the streets. That discontent is now in the decision-making, you know, corridors of Mali.
Andrew, has France's intervention in Mali been a failure?
I don't think we could talk about it in terms of a failure, especially because it's impossible to know what the situation would be if French forces weren't in the country and in the Sahel. I think what we can say definitively is that the security situation is not better. The presence and the influence of jihadist groups has spread in various parts of the country. There's also been a breakdown of communal relations and a rise of self-defense militias, or a further increase of the power and presence of self-defense militias, communal militias. So in that regard, certainly things are not better. I don't think it's necessarily fair to frame it in terms of failure or not of France alone, in part because France is the lead sort of offensive military actor from the international community. But there's also a significant other presence, including of the UN peacekeeping force, EU training missions and capacity assistance building and others. So it's not quite the right framing, but certainly the security situation continues to get worse, not just in Mali, but across the region.
Yeah, we'll expand on that in just a moment. But first, Fabrice, going back to what Avigwe was saying just a few moments ago, I get the feeling that some people in Mali would actually be pleased to see the back of the French troops. Would some there prefer a negotiated settlement with the middle militants to achieve peace through negotiations? Because, of course, France has flatly refused to negotiate. It's something that it won't countenance.
I mean, of course, I cannot speak for the local population. But what is true is if you look at previous or current conflicts, you always have to come to a point where you bring in some elements from rebel groups into a government of national reconciliation. Now the question is whether the French diplomacy has been doing this work to have the elements from the rebel groups who can be brought in under a government, and obviously excluding those that are too extremist to be brought in, and whether the local government itself is willing to embrace that. But I think when you look at Afghanistan, two rigid opposition from France, like the US in the case of Afghanistan, will mean that the rebels could actually gain some ground and ultimately actually take over the country. So I think you need to consider some kind of settlement at some point.
Okay. And Avigwe, do you want to pick up on that? I saw you nodding in agreement. Are there elements within the rebel groups that could be brought into some sort of government of national reconciliation? And would the current regime in Bamako allow that?
Yes, I agree, because reconciliation is an inevitable part of conflict resolution, and we cannot underestimate the power of dialogue when we're looking at the Malian context. You have a central government that is struggling to unite the country, and the most of these militias, they are not all of them are actually ideologically driven. Some share genuine discontent towards the state because of underdevelopment and other, you know, issues not related to terrorism or ideological machination. So I think it's very important going forward that we have to reemphasize the importance of dialogue, and whether France likes it or not. I don't think France should be the one to decide whether there should be dialogue in Mali or not. That remains the prerogative of Malian leaders to ask themselves if it's time for dialogue. And if you look at the indication, even going back to Boubacar Keïta's government, there was already, you know, a movement in that direction to see how we can unite both rebel leaders, political leaders, religious leaders who think Mali should be moving in a particular direction away from conflict. And it's time that we begin to go back to those moves towards, you know, dialogue. Whether the French want dialogue in Mali, I don't think that should define whether Mali really moves towards a dialogue.
Of course, Andrew, muddying the waters even further here is the potential presence of Russian mercenaries on the ground in Mali. Would they succeed where France and and the German and Estonian forces currently serving there have failed? And what are the strategic risks to having non-state actors working in such a highly volatile region?
Well, I think there are a number of potential risks, and we should start with that because, first of all, France, you and other partners have made quite clear that they see a potential Russian mercenary presence as incompatible with their own presence and their own operations in Mali. But then beyond that, also, first of all, we don't have much information about what the outlines of a potential deal would be, what a potential deployment of Russian mercenaries might look like. But certainly looking at the track record in Libya, in Mozambique, in the Central African Republic, we see not only that these forces have not always been particularly effective, but that they've been quite brutal in many ways in their treatment of civilians in particular. So I don't think there's any indication that even a large deployment of Russian mercenaries would be able to somehow fix the problems in Mali in ways that the international deployments, in partnership with Malian forces, has not been able to do. The problems are elsewhere. It's not just a question of more or less effective military forces, but even then, there's no indication that we can see that Russian mercenary forces would be more effective or would be better suited to dealing with the very complicated threats in Mali.
Fabrice, the British Foreign Office has described the Wagner group as a driver of conflict which capitalises on instability for its own interests. Is it right? And where has this relationship come from? Does Mali have historical links or an ongoing relationship with Russia?
I think the Foreign Office description is pretty accurate. If you look at the track record of the Wagner group in Ukraine, Syria, Libya, they have brought more violence, including especially on civilian population. We should not forget that. They often back the strong man, which is not always in the interest of stability in those regions. And they have often actually produced a radicalization or polarization of the conflict, as we saw, for example, in Syria. So I do agree with the British Foreign Office description. What they give, however, not just to some businessmen who are investing in those mercenaries, but what they give to the Russian government and to Vladimir Putin is a token into a bigger game, basically a diplomatic seat at the table. This is what we've seen in Libya, where now you have to count with Russia. You cannot settle the conflict in Libya, address the different, grievances of the various groups without Russia helping. And I think this is what Putin is doing. So for a minimum price, with lots of deniability, he can gain actually a seat at the top table with the big powers. And I think that's what their strategy is, because like you said, I don't think Russia has historically some extensive interest in that part of the world, but it buys itself a seat for relatively low cost.
Avigwe, what impact would the presence of Russian mercenaries have on the regional military partnership between Mali and its neighbours to tackle the militants? Niger's foreign minister has said that agreement will collapse if Russian mercenaries are on the ground in Mali. Is he right?
No, I don't think he's right. We have to look at the fact that the immediate reason or the immediate impact Wagner will have in Mali is regime security. That's very, very important and cannot be missing from any analysis. If we're looking at a government or a junta that had its leader almost assassinated not so long ago, and that failed attack definitely set up concern towards his own security. And with Wagner, like we've seen with in Central African Republic, we can actually provide regime security, personal security for him and senior official, that's one. But in a broader regional context, of course, we see the Chadians have spoken against Wagner participating or foreign interference, as they call it. But it's a bit... you have to understand Chad's concern comes from the fact that when former President Deby was killed in April, the Chadians came out to say the rebel militia that the president was fighting were actually trained by Wagner. So that concern for Chad is there, or let's say the fear that this group might proliferate around Chad is there already. They're already in Central African Republic, a neighboring country, you know, to Chad. But we have to look at Mali, why Mali itself wants to bring in Wagner. And it comes from the fact that Mali has not just the sovereign right to decide who it partners with, but also wants to see if there are other options to be able to solve the problem. Whether Wagner can solve the problem, I think it's clear. I don't think they can solve the problem because the problems in Mali are very complex. But, of course, they can be part of counter-terrorism operation.
Anyway, the regime might feel a little more secure with them in the country, but there aren't going to be enough of them to replace the current number of French troops there. Would people in Mali feel any more secure if Russian mercenaries were there?
Honestly, it wouldn't really matter whether the people feel secure. It would be whether they are able to deliver on what the objectives are. If it's to expand the territorial integrity of the Malian state, of course, that would definitely piggyback on, you know, some form to improve confidence in Goïta, Assimi Goïta, not necessarily Wagner, right? But the risk here is knowing fully well, nobody knows how France is going to respond, if they are going to accelerate the withdrawal, or if G5 Sahel, this might lead to expulsion of Mali or some form of complication within the regional response, because Mali certainly did not consult with regional countries in the lead up to this agreement. So this is a very unilateral agreement to combat a problem that is regional. So that lack of coordination is why anytime in the analysis about Sahel security, we're always saying we have to find ways to do better coordination.
All right, Andrew, should neighbouring countries be nervous at the prospect of Russian mercenaries operating nearby and potentially on their territory in the case of Niger and Burkina Faso?
Certainly, I think there's some reason to be concerned about this, particularly given the way that that the Wagner Group has behaved in other countries, and given also the fact that I think there's reasonable concern about the impact that this would have not only on civilians, but also on potentially on even fomenting the insurgency further, given the behavior of these forces, again, in other conflicts. I also think that part of this is that for the regional countries, there's been a long process of trying to put in place, not always easily or effectively, but trying to put in place different international cooperation frameworks for resolving conflict or for dealing with the conflict in the Sahel. And any rapid change in that or a departure of the international community from Mali could have some benefits to regional countries, especially Niger, but could also disrupt a lot of this work and disrupt a lot of the networks that are in place. And I think that would also prove quite complicated to navigate.
And Andrew, we're rapidly running out of time here. Less than 2 minutes, if you can answer this question, and it's a big question. What needs to happen to bring peace and stability to the Sahel region?
That's not really a question you can answer in 2 minutes. And if I knew, then I think I would have given this. But I do think that there does need to be a much more persistent focus on the needs of civilians, the needs of Sahelian communities, and the politics of all of this. These are not military solutions. They're not economic solutions to these conflicts. Ultimately, many of these conflicts are political and have to be dealt with through a political lens, through political processes that are inclusive and where the international community can support regional and local initiatives. I think that's how we can start to get on a better path in the region.
And Fabrice, coming back to something that you were saying a few moments ago about Russia getting a seat at the table relatively cheaply, what are the political and security costs to Europe from all of this, from what's going on in the Sahel region right now?
Well, the obvious cost is to have a potential, a terrorist threat on European nationals living in the region, but more worryingly also on a European territory. Even though that threat has been remote lately, which can be regarded as one of the small measures of success of the French intervention. The other cost, which I think we see almost every day on TV screens, is by not having stable governments, by not having controlled borders, you do have a significant illegal migration flow going from the Sahel to Europe. which politically is, as you know, very controversial and plays in a very toxic way in domestic political debates. And don't forget that France is going to vote for a new president next year. So I think these are the immediate costs. However, continuing on the same basis as now has also its costs in terms of human costs, death toll of French soldiers and other soldiers, and also financial. So I think this is the very thin line that we have to walk here, right, is to do less, but not to do nothing.
And Vigwe, we, as I say, time is terribly, terribly tight here. Is this something that the military-led government in Mali can solve, or is it something that's going to have to wait until there is a democratically elected civilian-led government?
The security situation in Mali and across the Sahel is so dire, we can't make it an issue of democracy or not democracy can solve. Whatever government is in place, there's something that can be done today, tomorrow, next tomorrow, immediately. So what I expect in Mali to do is try to work more closely with the regional government. I know the dynamic is different now because it's a coup government and ECOWAS is frowning upon the transitional government, but we have to look at the solution, a real regional response that is truly regional, not a French-led response like G5 Sahel, which has failed, but one that really expands to include all of the players in the region. Like, for instance, why is Nigeria not part of the coalition to combat terrorism in a continent or a part of the continent where most of the violence we've seen has cut across more countries? So Mali can solve this problem, but it will need to do better to coordinate, you know, with its neighbours.
There, gentlemen, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it. We've run out of time. Thank you very much indeed for being with us. Fabrice Poitier, Ovigwe Agwegu and Andrew Leibovich. And that's it for the Inside Story podcast. The producers were Mohamed El-Aichi, Thuria Carr and Michael Harwood. Studio sound was by Alvaro Galan. The editors were Anna Savage, Lynn Guyon and Joe DeFrias. Be sure to subscribe to the Inside Story podcast to catch every episode. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again on Monday.